Oh, jeez.
Blog Talk Radio.
Narcotics are bad and cold. Ah, the things we talk about, eh? Good evening. Welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with...
Sometimes they're bad, but sometimes bad is good. Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One.
Yeah, and we're still feeling
our way through the weekend, aren't we?
Yes, we are. And I'll tell you what, we're going to go rapid fire tonight, folks, because we do truly have a lot of radio and precious little time for you to hear us yammering a whole lot.
Right.
Not that we won't have fun and facts. We will.
But I did leave in all the commercials on the Sears. It's just fun to hear all these commercials at the time that this went on. Sears was the number one retailer in the world, and now they're out of business. So it's kind of fun hearing all these commercials.
They really blew an opportunity, too, because they were the catalog company of the world.
They were technically what you would probably think of as the first internet company, because you get your catalog in the mail, you'd order it in the mail, it would come in the mail, and now you order it over the internet, and it comes in the mail. It technically was the first internet company.
Delivery times have improved.
And they have, yeah.
Because there were things that you could order from Sears that would take literally months to get to you.
You could order everything from a doll to a kit to build your own house from Sears. And there are several of those still around the country. There's one probably about the 8 miles from me here in Green, Ohio. There's at least one right there. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody told me there were some Sears houses here in Akron still standing as well.
And I would bet there's more kits out there to build now with this recent rage of mini homes.
Yeah, that's true. Those are strange. I mean, they're so small and compact, but yet it seems like whoever has them, I would think it'd be like living in a trailer, but they seem to have more room than that.
I think you'd have to be a bit of a minimalist. I have too much junk. I have too much stuff that I like. I like my stuff, and I need a house, damn it.
Yeah, yeah. Yep,
and we need radio, and we're doing we're wrapping up our weekend on Tales of the Blind.
Yes, and a couple of interesting tales again tonight. One from the great H.G. Wells in The Country of the Blind, and we hear it on Escape, and the lead actor in this is none other than Paul Frees. And then we've also got a Sears Radio Theater with a tremendous story called Climb. And to be honest with you, the further it went, the more it put me on the edge of my seat. This is probably the most edgy Sears Radio Theater to this date that I found. I thought House on Fire might have been, but this one I think is edgier than that even. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, and what we'll do though is keep you in suspense, which we're not playing tonight. By starting off with Escape and finish with a bang with that great story Climb that's coming up. And I can't wait to hear Paul Frees anyway. So without further ado, let's get rolling. We got a lot of radio to squeeze in with Country of the Blind. A whole lot. Country of the Blind from Escape, and it's from?
It is from November 26th, 1947.
Are you burned up at the high price of turkeys? Can't get eggs for your pumpkin pie? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape.
You're trapped in a remote valley of the Andes, walled in by sheer rock precipices, and surrounding you, closing in on you, is a band of blind men who want your eyes.
Escape, produced and directed by William N. Robeson and carefully plotted to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight, we escape to the high mountains of Ecuador and to a remarkable world where sight is unknown, as H.G. Wells imagined it in his curious story, The Country of the Blind.
My name is Ibarra. I am a mining engineer in Quito, Ecuador, high in the towering Andes. And up until a year ago, my chief sport was mountain climbing. My last climb was an attempt to scale the remote and forbidding peak of Parascotopetl, a 20,000-foot crag unconquered by man. It is unconquered still. 3,000 feet from the icy summit, our party turned back and fled for their lives. All of us escaped except one, a guide named Nunez, who slipped and fell over the precipice, disappearing into the vast chasm that yawned 10,000 feet beneath us. The horror of that man's fall has haunted my dreams for a year. Because of it, I have forsaken mountain climbing for the rest of my life. And that decision still stands, even though today I have seen Nunez. He was sitting on the steps of my shack when I arrived at the mine this morning. At first, I didn't recognize him. He was so much changed. I thought he was a ragged beggar asking alms.
Is it you, Senor Ibarra?
My name is Ibarra, yes. What do you want?
You do not know me, Senor.
I know, You look like a man I knew once, but he is...
Dead? Dead on the slopes of Parascotopetl?
Nunez. No, it couldn't be you.
Nunez. That is my name, Senor. At least that is the name I remember.
But you fell. I saw you fall.
Yes.
It's impossible that you could have lived.
Perhaps the gods of the mountain had some reason to spare me.
Nunez, if we'd had any idea that you were alive, but you went down, down thousands of feet. We couldn't even attempt to find your body.
I know. I do not blame you. You could not have reached me. And if you had, I should not have welcomed you at first. But then later...
What do you mean, Nunez?
Senor, you will not believe what I have to tell.
I can hardly believe that I'm seeing you, talking to you. But what has happened to you?
You remember that night, the night I fell?
Yes.
We had been toiling all day, inching our way up a steep ice wall. And as darkness came, we found a narrow ledge, barely 3 feet wide.
Not very wide, but we can get our shoulder wall up, cut off some of this wind.
Well, that'll be welcome.
Yes, but first we'll rest a moment.
Look at that icy devil up there glistening in the moonlight.
There's another 3,000 feet of sheer ice wall to the top.
Well, I can see why no one's ever made it. Think we should go on?
I don't know. Nunez, what do you think?
It is not my place to say, Senor. I was hired to guide you to the top. I agreed.
What do you really think?
If I believed in the gods of the mountain, as the Indians do, I should be frightened now.
Why?
Because we have invaded the Forbidden Circle. This part of the Andes is unmapped and unknown, Senor.
And therefore shrouded in superstition, eh?
It is an easy thing to believe strange things in this white loneliness.
Some of the legends are really fascinating. I've heard of one, something about a hidden valley called the Country of the Blind.
Yes. It is supposed to be somewhere down there below us. A fertile valley which was settled many centuries ago and then cut off by the great landslide of Arauca.
But why the Country of the Blind?
Well, even before it was isolated, the people developed a strange illness. All of them slowly went blind. After that, their children were born blind. And the legend is that the valley was the home of the mountain gods. It was too beautiful for human eyes.
Todd, well, it's all nonsense.
Yes, of course.
Would be pleasant to find it, though. You know the old proverb, in the country of the blind, the one-eyed man is king?
I doubt that we could ever find it. I even doubt if it exists.
Of course not. I was only joking.
Yes. Well, now if you're arrested, we'll make the shelter wall.
Right. I'll give you a hand in a minute. Believe me, Ibarra, for 2 pesos, I'd give up this crime. I never realized
how... Senores, I'm slipping!
Hang on! Nunez! Nunez! Ah!
In one horrible instant, my foot had slipped on the treacherous ledge and I'd gone over, falling far out into the icy black night, falling down, down. I fell perhaps 1,000 feet. Then I felt a heavy stinging impact of snow. I'd fallen on an almost perpendicular snow slope. And now I was sliding down, down, tumbling over and over. And then suddenly I realized that my own motion had almost stopped. And it was the snow that was moving. I was riding an avalanche. At almost the same moment, I went over the second precipice. It was higher than the first, much higher, perhaps 4,000 feet. I fell with the snow for what seemed minutes, every second expecting the terrible final impact. But the impact never came. Miracle of miracles, that sheer wall blended almost imperceptibly into another steep snow slope. And again I was sliding. Gradually, as the arc of the slope curved away, I felt myself slow down. And finally, I rolled to a stop and lay still. When I awoke, it was morning, and I was covered with snow. I shook off the cold white blanket on my chest and rested a moment. And then I rolled over on my back and looked up. My heart almost stopped as I saw from where I'd fallen, where the mountain towered 10,000 feet above me. Then carefully I felt at myself. My clothes were torn. I was bruised and bleeding. I ached in every muscle, but I had not a single broken bone. I lay there and offered up a prayer to the gods of the mountain. Far below me lay a lush valley sparkling in the morning sunlight. I could see the stately trees and the green meadows fresh with dew. I started down the mountain, but it was still an arduous descent. The farther down I got, the more I realized the beauty of the scene. Why, this was a hidden paradise I'd fallen into, and I was the first man ever to see it. So I thought, but I was wrong. I realized that first when I saw the cultivation in the meadows, and then the walks, well-kept stone walks laid in a symmetrical pattern all over the valley. And then I saw them. There were men and women lying under the trees and resting in the fields. Nearby, a collection of windowless huts marked a village, and the plastering of the houses was done in a wild variety of colors. I thought to myself, the plasterer who did that must have been blind as a bat. Then I saw 2 of the men quite close to me. They were standing on a bridge over the little stream. They were dressed in odd loose clothing, and there was a strange look about their faces. They failed to notice me as I approached until I shouted. Suddenly they looked up attentively in my direction. I waved wildly at them, but they took no notice. Why, the fools must be blind. Blind? Could it be that I have fallen into the country of the blind? In the country of the blind, a one-eyed man can be king.
Hello there. You needn't be afraid. I won't hurt you. I come in peace.
It is a man, or a spirit come down from the rocks.
Oh, I'm a man, all right. Just like you, but I've had a miraculous escape, and now I find myself here in your valley.
Valley? Valley? Come hither. Let me feel of you.
Yes, certainly. Here, my arm. Is my face? You see, I am a man, like yourself. Here, feel my lips. They move with speech. Oh, careful there. Gently, those are my eyes.
Eyes? Eyes? That is strange. Feel this, Correa. Yes, I feel.
Careful. Feel the eyelids flutter?
He is but imperfectly formed. Some strange bulge there. Unseemly.
No, no. You see, your eyes are shrunken in, but mine are whole. I can see.
See? Pedro, he is a strange wild one. Where does he come from?
He must have come down out of the rocks.
No, from over the mountains, out of the country beyond there where men can see. From Bogota, where there are 100,000 people and a city stretches out of sight.
Sight? What strange words he uses, without meaning. And feel the coarseness of his hair, like a llama's.
Our fathers have told us men may be made by forces of nature. It is the warmth of things, and moisture, and rottenness.
Let us lead him to the elders.
But no one need lead me. I can see.
See?
Oh, yes, of course, I can... I didn't see your water bucket.
His senses are still imperfect. He stumbles and talks unmeaning words. Lead him by the hand, Pedro.
But look, I... Oh, well, all right.
These people had been blind for centuries. They had forgotten even the words associated with seeing. And they thought I was an idiot, only half-formed. Especially when they led me into the pitch blackness of one of their windowless huts. And I stumbled over someone.
A thousand pardons, Medina Sarota. He is a clumsy one.
I'm sorry I fell down. I couldn't see in the darkness.
Who is this? And what is he saying?
He is but newly formed, good father. He has come down from the rocks. He stumbles as he walks and mingles words that mean nothing with his speech.
He is a wild man out of the rocks.
No, I come from Bogota, over the mountains.
You hear? Bogota. He uses wild words. His mind is hardly formed. He has only the beginnings of speech.
Bogota?
Yes. I come from the great world where men have eyes and see.
That must be his name, Bogota.
He stumbled twice as we came thither.
He must be taught.
No, you don't understand. I can see, but not in the dark. To you, darkness or light is all the same, but to me, to us who can see, to us outside in the world beyond the mountains...
Mountains? What are mountains?
Very well, then, beyond the rocks.
There is nothing beyond the rocks. That is the end of the world.
Oh, but surely you must realize the sky above covers more than just this valley.
Sky? Above? There is nothing above but the roof of rock. He is very raw, my children. He shall have to be taught from the beginnings. Now take him away. Feed him.
It shall be done, good father.
But guide him. See that he does not stumble over my daughter again.
Do not fear, Father. I shall guide him myself and feed him.
Very well.
Come, take my hand.
Thank you. It'll be a pleasure to get outside again, out of this darkness.
Come this way.
Yes. What is your name?
Medina Sarote.
Mine is Juan. Juan Nunez. Oh, oh, sunlight. Oh, this is better. And now I may look at you. Why, you're beautiful. I cannot tell you what a wonderful thing you are to see.
Oh, please, you must be careful.
Why?
If you do not learn quickly and cease speaking such strange words, they may not be so kind to you. They might be angry. They might even destroy you.
Destroy? Uh-oh.
Yep, could be trouble. Could be trouble.
Something is rotten in the state of Denmark.
Yep. And so it may not be that in the country of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, because he's got two eyes and he's the outcast and he ain't leading nothing right now.
Yep. I'll tell you, this guy's got it. He's got it rough.
Escape did such a wonderful job of presenting, and many of the tales they told were like this, were very classic tales. And this did such a wonderful job of presenting them. They had basically the best West Coast radio actors that you could for these. And, of course, Paul Frees being the lead actor, you recognize that. But, you know, you had William Conrad and Paul Frees and so many others that were just the great radio actors of the day.
Yep. And you got them here on Erie House Radio. Let's get moving. We do have a lot. So let's finish up Country of the Blind from Escape.
This thought had not occurred to me, and suddenly I had a twinge of fear. Still, the proverb kept running through my mind, in the country of the blind, a one-eyed man is king. But try as I would, I cannot make them understand my wonderful gift of sight. They thought me stupid and untaught, almost an idiot. Day by day, I learned their peaceful ways, but they could not learn mine. It was beginning to get on my nerves. Theirs too, perhaps.
Bogota? Bogota, come hither. Bogota, you move not.
No, and I won't, you old beetle. I'll show you. I'll leave the path.
Bogota, trample not on the grass. It is not allowed.
How did you know I stepped on the grass?
I heard, of course.
Heard, but I didn't make a sound.
Why do you not come when I call you? Can you not hear the path as you walk?
I can see it.
There is no such word as see. Cease this folly and follow the sound of my feet.
Oh, my time will come.
You will learn. There is much to learn in the world.
Has no one ever told you in the country of the blind, the one-eyed man is king?
Blind? What is blind?
Oh, never mind.
Bogota, I must warn you. Just keep quiet and learn. And stop this nonsense about seeing.
Nonsense, is it? I'll show you. I've taken enough of your insults. Unformed mind. Got no sense yet. I'll be king here. I can see and I'll be king.
Bogota, stop it.
No, I'm through with your orders. I'll show you what an advantage sight can be. I can hit you and hurt you and you can't see me to strike back.
Bogota, put down that spade.
You devil, your ears are sharp, aren't they?
Bogota, there must be no violence.
By heaven, I'll hit you if you come any closer. I swear I will.
Put down that spade and come off the grass.
You don't understand. You are blind and I can see. I can see.
Bogota.
I'll hurt you. I swear I will.
Put down that spade.
Leave me alone! I hit him with a spade and ran. Over the wall, outside the valley, back to the rocks, back to the cliff I'd come from. When I reached that sheer rock wall, I knew there was no place to go. For 2 days and nights, I stayed outside the valley. I grew hungry and cold. Then I realized the hopelessness of my position. I was trapped. I must spend the rest of my life here. There was no way out. So I went back. I confess, O chief of the elders, I was mad. I admit I was only newly made.
That is better. And do you still think you can see?
No. That was folly. The words mean nothing less than nothing.
And what is over here?
Rock. There's a roof above the world, a roof of rock and very smooth.
Very well. And,
please, before you ask me any more, give me food or I shall die.
Very well. Give him food. Medina Salade. And after that, we must put him to the most menial tasks in the village. Guard him well. And perhaps he shall learn yet.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, that is better. You are kind, Medina Sarote. Very kind.
I am glad you came back.
You are? If they were all like you, I should never have run away.
What was that word you said I was?
Beautiful. You are. Well, even your eyes... They're not shrunken depressions like the others.
It means something nice, beautiful.
Something very nice, Medina Sarote. Tell me, why is it you have no husband?
I have a disfigurement. These long hairs.
Oh, your eyelashes? Oh, but they're beautiful.
They are considered a disfigurement.
You're the most lovely girl in the valley. But they wouldn't know, would they? You have no lover?
No.
Medina Sarote, what do you think of me? Do you think of me as an idiot like all the rest do?
Oh, no. No, you have much to learn, but you will learn it, I'm sure. And you are kind and gentle. And your voice is soft. You speak words that are soft and warm. No one has ever spoken such words to me.
Then I shall speak them often, Medina Sarote. You are the only one in this valley, in this whole world I care for. And so it began. I, the village idiot, the slave boy who dreamed to be king. I, with my eyes still whole, fell in love with Medina Sarote, the daughter of the elder of the village. Only to her could I open my heart without fear. Only to her could I speak of the beauty I could see around me. Oh, it is a beautiful valley, Medina Sarote. Green with grass and yellow with sunlight. And flowers, bright flowers dotting the hills. And in the cool of the night, the stars gleam like diamonds in the sky.
Oh, the words sound lovely. But what are stars?
Stars? Why, no, you wouldn't understand.
And what do you mean, in the cool of the night? You still get that confused one. The night is warm. The day is cool.
Oh, no, it is you here who have them backwards. Because the darkness means nothing to you. You work in the cool of the night and sleep in the heat of the day, but...
You are teasing me.
No. Oh. What does it matter? All that matters is you. You. Here beside me, Medina Sarote. I love you.
And I love you.
I know they still think me an idiot, but... You listen to what I say, and you don't think me an idiot, do you?
Oh, no. I like to hear you speak.
Then will you... Would you marry me?
Yes. Yes, Juan. I will marry you. But, Father...
He is an idiot. He has delusions. He cannot do anything right.
But he is getting better. He's better than he was. And he is strong and kind. Stronger and kinder than anyone in the world. And he loves me. And I love him.
No, I will not have it.
Great, sire. If you please.
What is it, good doctor?
I have examined Bogota, and the case is clear to me. I think very probably he might be cured.
Huh? And how might that be done?
His brain is affected by something. I believe I know what it is. Those queer things he calls eyes. Hmm? Where we have but an agreeable depression, he has great lumps with flaps over them that move and long hairs. Consequently, his brain is in a constant state of irritation.
But what can be done to cure him?
A very simple surgical operation. Remove the cause of the irritation. We will merely cut out his eyes.
But, Juan, they say it will make you well. It will make you look like us.
But you don't understand, Medina Sarote. My world is sight. You would not want me to lose my most precious possession?
I don't know.
There are so many beautiful things to see. The flowers, the far sky with its drifting clouds, the sunsets, the stars. And you. If only just to see you, it is good to have sight. And I would never see you again.
Juan, I love to hear you say these things, even though I know it is just your imagination.
But, my dear, these things are real.
No, they are fancies. This is real. If you will let them cut out your eyes, we can be together always.
And you want me to?
Oh, if you would. If only you would.
What else can I do?
My dearest one. My dearest with a tender voice. I will repay you.
Oh, Madonna.
Be brave. And carry my voice in your thoughts. Now I must go. And tomorrow.
Yes.
Tomorrow will be forever.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Madonna. I suppose I knew it then, when I said that. I only meant to go up on the rocks and look out over the valley, to spend my last days feasting my eyes, my precious eyes, on the wonderful, beautiful world of light and color. But when I got there, it was too beautiful, too lovely, this valley, this home of the mountain gods. Beautiful and forbidden, I drank it in. The green of the fields, the blue of the gently curving stream, the orange of the lichen in the rocky crevices. I climbed higher to see the great snow-capped peaks towering above and away to the distant sky, and still higher as the shadows turned the snow to purple and crimson and deep blue. The valley now was far below and as beautiful as a painting. But like a painting, it seemed unreal. Medina Sarote was small and far away, a distant dream. And the world of sight was here, all around, overpowering, wonderful. I turned and began to climb up that sheer rock wall. How many months it took me to make my way out over those mountains, over glaciers and snowfields and sheer precipices, I cannot guess. How I lived through the cold and hunger of it, I cannot tell you. But I'm here at last, back from the country of the blind.
Good heavens, man. What an experience.
Yes. Terrible and wonderful.
But you aren't sorry you came back?
Sorry? I see her face clearly now. It is the only thing I see.
Nunez, come, you need food. Here, take my hand.
Thank you. Where is it, Senor Ibarra?
Nunez.
Yes. The gods of the mountain have had their revenge. Those months of crawling over the snow and ice, with the sun glaring down. Yes. I am blind.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and tonight presented The Country of the Blind by H.G. Wells, adapted for radio by John Dunkel, with Paul Frees as Nunez, Peggy Weber as Medina Sarote, Bill Conrad as Ibarra, and Harry Bartel as Correa. The special musical score was conceived and conducted by Cy Feuer. Next week...
When you're tired from a hard day at the office, or your back aches from bending over a hot stove, next week at this same time, when you want to get away from it all, we offer you escape.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
There we go with our first story, Country of the Blind. And
I was just going to say, as it quickly goes in there, I think we can still yet learn something from this wonderful story by H.G. Wells.
In that case, I'm rather glad that you interjected. Erie House Radio proudly presents a Garrulous Moral of the Story.
With apologies to Gar, seeing is believing, unless you don't believe in seeing. There you go.
I see.
A quickie. There you go.
Yeah, I haven't had one of those in years. Oh, sorry.
Alright.
There we go.
And so that we have a few minutes left, we probably need to keep rolling here. But I tell you, I truly enjoyed this upcoming program of the Sears Radio Theater. Of course, it was a different night each week. And this was the adventure night. Friday was adventure night heading into the weekend. They did not record a release for Saturday or Sunday. It was just a Monday through Friday gig. Production by Elliot Lewis, who also brought Rod Serling back with the Zero Hour, and about 5 years later, he brought back this, which would Sears Radio Theater started on CBS, which would be later become the Mutual Radio Theater, as it kind of got sold off to Mutual. And I guess the big difference between this and CBS Radio Mystery Theater was Hyman Brown always stayed in New York with the Radio Mystery Theater. And Elliot Lewis always stayed on the West Coast, always stayed in the Hollywood area to present his radio. And so you get a little different voices. They're all great actors, but you get different voices in the two different programs because of that.
And who's our host on Adventure Night?
This is the first time we shared one with Richard Widmark. And, of course,
cool.
He started off in radio doing especially a lot of inner sanctums, several inner sanctums as well.
And we got to roll. We have got to
roll.
So here is part one of Sears Radio Theater with an exciting tale called Climb.
It's 9 minutes past 10. Time for your Sears Theater. The Sears Radio Theater will present a story of two men in climb.
Jack, you all right?
Yeah. I'm working on a hold.
A blind man would have a handhold by now. Will you help me?
Your host, Richard Widmark, will be with you after this message from your local station.
I'm lost and lonely, scared and sad, trembling at the thought of making you mad. My love is yours, but at times you're so cold. If life's like this, take me before I grow old.
This song was written by a man now serving time in a state prison. Most of the men and women in prison today were abused children, and many abused children grow up to abuse their own children. Child abusers can be helped. Find out how. Write Prevent Child Abuse, Box 2866, Chicago, Illinois, 60690.
Please stop the hurt. I've suffered since my birth. Join the abused child fight. Put an end to the sleepless night.
A message of the Ad Council and the National Committee for Prevention of Child Abuse.
This is Richard Widmark.
When formed by eruptive agencies, the birth of a mountain is a violent event.
Vesuvius, Hood, Rainier, and Shasta are a few examples. Their surfaces bulged upward by cooled volcanic materials. However, the world's great mountain chains, the thin-aired Andes, the majestic Rockies, and the giants of the Himalayas were formed beneath the earth under much less dramatic circumstances, known as folding. Direct aid climbers today use steel pitons and nylon rope to challenge forbidding heights that superstitious men 2 centuries earlier believed the domicile of dragons. They pit brain and muscle against the impassable for momentary triumph atop breathless grandeur. And in risking death for triumph over a mountain's natural terrors, no expedition ever disgraced itself by admitting defeat and turning back. But what if you find yourself, as Jack DeShields and Dan Hunt do, on a climb where you can't turn back and you can't go forward, cut off from help? And that's only the beginning of our story.
Radio Theater, a new adventure in radio listening. Brought to you 5 nights a week by Sears Roebuck and Company. Sears, where America shops. Your hosts,
Lorne Greene. I'll bring you stories of the Old West and the New.
Andy Griffith with a look at the funny side of life.
Vincent Price with tales of mystery and suspense.
Cicely Tyson with stories about love, hate, and related things.
Richard Widmark. I'll bring you stories of pure adventure.
5 nights of exceptional entertainment every week. Brought to you in Elliot Lewis production of The Sears Radio Theater. Our story, Climb, by Bruce Martin. Our stars, Vic Perrin and Stephen Markle.
When I need advice, I go to my mom.
Why not? It's free.
Now that I'm married and moving into a new house, I want all the advice I can get. So when mom says shop Sears, I listen.
You should. Sears is a great help on those big items you'll need for your new home. Major appliances like washers, dryers, and refrigerators. They'll deliver, install, and service. I always depend on Sears. You should, too.
I can't believe they can do it for $19.99.
Installed?
The aluminized Sears muzzler is only $19.99 installed. And listen to the muzzler promise.
Sears promises that the muzzler will last as long as you own your American-made car.
Or return it for refund or replacement free.
And if Sears installed it, they'll install the new one free.
Well, you can't beat that.
I think it's fantastic.
Great promise.
The muzzler, just $19.99 installed. Clamps if needed, 99 cents each extra. Sizes to fit most American-made cars. Prices may vary in Alaska and Hawaii at most Sears Tire and Auto Centers.
Generations ago, families dined by the warmth of the open hearth. Today, Sears rekindles this spirit with its open hearth dining room furniture. Faithfully rendered early American designs and careful workmanship give it an heirloom quality. The satin glow and warm highlighting of Sears open hearth take 26 steps to achieve. There's no shorter method to bring out the beauty of the wood. And like all good furniture, open hearth is made to last for a long time with sturdy tongue and groove and mortise and tenon construction. Choose from 16 different pieces of open hearth at most Sears retail stores.
Hey, look, in here, inside this stylish man's dress shirt. I'm a Sears Value dress shirt label just popping with pride, because Sears Value dress shirts are sure to be popular for a number of reasons. They have fashion spread collars, come in classic patterns and solids in short and long sleeves. You'll appreciate the perma-pressed polyester or polyester cotton blends for easy care, plus at low value prices, what a buy! Just look for me, the Value dress shirt label, at Sears Men's Store, where style, sense, and satisfaction combine to label me right for you.
If you were standing at the base of Long's Peak, 10 miles outside Estes Park in Colorado, you might be able to see the figures of 2 climbers as they move upward on what is called the Diamond Face. 1,700 smooth vertical feet of rock on the east base of Long's Peak.
Unfortunately, as Jack DeShields and Dan Hunt continue their arduous ascent, there is no one standing below to observe their progress. At this moment, however, right now, you are up there with Jack and Dan as they climb.
That's odd. The rock surface shows signs of extreme wear, but I swear I pounded that piton in solid. It's out okay. I'll clip a carabiner through the piton's eye and slip in the climbing rope.
Need more slack on your running line?
No. You're doing fine, Dan. Keep me on a tight belay, though. Surface on this part of the diamond face is glass smooth.
Roger, Wilco. Bilko, I have you belayed on a red alert. How old is the diamond face?
The whole Rocky Mountain range is relatively young. A toddler from the Mesozoic era. 60, 70 million years old. Climbing.
Climb. I think what's so incredible is the diamond face will challenge rock climbers centuries after you and I conquer her today.
Good climbers appreciate mountains, experience them. Conquering isn't involved.
That's your personal philosophy, Jack?
Oh, I have only one philosophy on a climb. The leader never falls.
I knew there had to be some compensation for looking up your backside the last 2 hours. I'm allowed to fall. Now, don't get me wrong. I appreciate hanging three-quarters of the way up 1,700 feet of sheer rock wall as much as the next guy. I'm just looking forward to sticking another flag in the relief map on my den wall tonight.
Concentrate on reaching the summit first, okay, Dan?
I'm right behind, below you.
The lead peacock's pulling out, falling.
Belay on. Help me out, Jack. Grab a handhold. Jack, you all right?
Yeah. I'm working on a hold.
A blind man would have a handhold by now. Will you help me?
I am blind. I can't wipe the blood out of my eyes when I'm digging my fingers into rock.
Blind? Above you, to your left. The outcropping where you hit your head.
I've got a handhold. Pull me up a bit.
I'm pulling.
Okay. I'm standing on the outcropping.
How bad are you hurt?
Well, blood's running into my eyes.
Don't move. You move an inch either way, you'll be in orbit. I can't belay you and pound a piton at the same time.
How far did I fall?
The slack on your belaying rope was about 10 feet. A leader fall is double the distance of the running line, roughly 20 feet. I put the carabiner through the piton and clipped on your running line. You're tied to the diamond face.
I'm not asking for a blow-by-blow account. Wipe the damn blood out of my eyes.
Coming down.
Double-check your holds coming down.
Does a horse make big potty in its stall?
Why another piton?
Because you were right. This part of the diamond face is all glass. Of course, you hit your head on the only outcropping for 50 feet.
Dan, I feel blood running down my chest inside my shirt.
Let me tie in before I put on my surgical gloves. I'm sure it's nothing. 30 or 40 stitches won't close.
Oh, you really know how to keep up a guy's morale.
And I'm digging the first aid kit out of my pack from behind the bologna sandwiches.
Don't you dare ask me if I'm hungry.
You should rest my mind. Okay, cotton balls, iodine. Turn your face to me. Oh, wow, Jack, you're a 6-foot replica of the Red Sea. The mountain ripped the Panama Canal under both your eyebrows.
Well, head wounds usually bleed worse than they are. Spare me the commentary and wipe the blood out of my eyes.
I'd love to, but the blood won't stop. I'm prescribing gauze and canceling the climb.
You wrap gauze around my eyes and you condemn me to die on this mountain.
Well, what am I supposed to do? Watch you bleed to death?
Nobody's ever led a blind man off a mountain peak like the Diamond Face. I've handled technical climbs for 13 years, I know.
The blood isn't only inside your shirt, it's dripping on your boots.
You wipe the blood out of my eyes and I'll climb.
Listen a minute and you'll hear the drip.
Do it.
If there was another...
Just do it.
I carry prescription codeine in my first aid kit.
Exactly what I want to do, immobilize myself. You're wrapping enough gauze around my eyes to muffle a gunshot.
What happened up there? I heard you yell your piton had pulled out, then I braced for the belay.
I hammered the piton into a patch of rotten rock.
Rotten rock? The piton sounded solid. You even tested it.
We weren't listening. We were talking. When rock is piton compatible, each hammer blow carries an increasingly higher pitch, and I didn't listen.
But rotten rock?
On this mountain, the Diamond Face?
Yeah, rotten rock from the spring thaw. The heavy snows melt and pour down the summit in a waterfall. The runoff strikes the rock wall where I tried to sink that Piton. Gee, Stan, I haven't been blindfolded since the last time I played pin the tail on the damn donkey.
The blindfold's only temporary. You'll get your sight back. There. I taped your head bandage. Hey, you buckling?
No basket case. A little sewing machine knee, that's all. Too much muscle tension in the legs.
Now move your right leg half a foot. That's it. Now plant. Better?
Yeah. Yeah, the muscles are relaxed again.
Okay. What's our next move?
We've only got one move. You tie me to the mountain and you go for help.
What happens an hour from now when you cramp up with sewing machine knee again? I don't recommend stretching your legs on this rock face without looking.
Dan, this is our first and probably our last climb together. Now, you mentioned a wonderful wife and some kids. How many?
It's a beautiful wife and a couple of wonderful kids. Amy will be 8 this month. Diane's 5.
Now, if you don't want to spoil Amy's 8th birthday party and maybe save my life at the same time, you get your butt down the mountain.
Amy asked to come along this morning. She said she wanted to watch me. I refuse to leave you in an untenable position.
I'm not getting through to you. Nightfall catches us on the Diamond Face the way we are without proper equipment. We're dead.
Well, we could yell for help or signal. Any hikers on the trail below should see us.
What hikers? We made a late start driving out of Denver this morning. We'd have passed any hikers back on the Chasm Lake Trail.
And then maybe a ranger.
The ranger at the check-in station told us what to expect climbing out of season. Solitude.
Okay. No hikers to help. We can still try to signal the ranger station.
With what? Smoke? Rock doesn't burn, Dan.
I thought we could nail a couple of shirts or the packs to the Diamond Face and set them on fire.
Throw in your pants and underwear, too. The station's a good 2-hour hike from the Diamond Face.
2 hours.
Well, that's why you have to leave now.
That's why I can't leave. Sunset's in 4 hours. 2 hours to the ranger station, and 2 hours back puts you in darkness. It'd be a night you'd never survive, not with your head injury.
Oh, you'd rather hold my hand through the night and maybe die with me.
I'm asking you to come up with an alternative. You're the Class 6 climber. You scaled the Diamond Face 3 times before today's assault. Tell me our options.
We have no options. We're too high up on the face to make a safe rappel down.
Sure. Under normal conditions, rappelling would be the fastest exit out of danger, but you can't see. A blind rappel is out of the question.
I've rappelled in darkness when I've had to, but we lack a decent belay point, so unfortunately, rappelling is out.
What are the chances on a slow descent?
Without eyes, less than 0. There were 6 decent handholds on the way up the Diamond Face. I'd be totally dependent on equipment holds. Tie me in. I prefer my chances against the night.
Well, we might have more of a chance than you think on a descent. Gravity pull would be weaker, less strain on the muscles.
Fine, except this bandage doesn't allow me to see my footing. I know a secure handhold by feel, but footing...
I'll guide you.
No, thanks. You guide me into a free fall without a parachute.
At least consider it as an option.
A blind man has 1,000,000-to-1 shot climbing up or down the Diamond Face without falling. So we're back to tying me in.
Have you noticed how disgustingly excellent our climbing weather has been today? I mean, who could ask for more? Warm sun, healthy breeze to cool you, maddeningly comfortable.
Yeah, it's been grand.
All that grandeur at our feet. Tiny Chasm Lake at the Diamond Face base, clay-red saber-tooth Rocky Mountain stretching off into the horizon.
Oh,
even a few snow caps. The most seductive torture chamber ever created by a lousy 20-foot fall.
Dan, nobody at the Sierra Club will call you a coward for going for help. They'll praise your common sense.
I'd like to change the view.
Say that again?
I said I'd like to change the view. Take it in from a safe piece of terra firma.
You stubborn novice. You did it. You came up with the option we needed.
I did?
Yeah. Granted, a blind man can't climb up or down the Diamond Face, and you won't tie me in because the sheer rock structure hasn't a single secure position.
Right.
But if we move off the Diamond Face horizontally until we find a secure position, you could tie me in and go for help.
Sounds good.
Sounds beautiful. I've been hanging in this spot so long, my finger muscles are bunched up into my shoulders. Oh, tell me the Diamond Face layout.
I'm looking at 30, 35 feet of sheer rock to the first salient position on my right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The left side is definitely out. It's at least 100 feet across the diamond face in that direction.
I've got a map in my pack.
Oh, hold still. I'll have a look.
I have a picture of the mountain in my mind. I remember a less technical route traced off to the right side of the diamond face.
Yeah, I've got the map open.
Well, you see it?
I see the cable route, keyhole route.
No, you're at the summit. You're too far up on the map.
The wind's picking up.
An afternoon characteristic to the diamond face.
According to this ranger map, the summit is accessible by a hiking trail from the other side of the mountain. If we could reach the summit by dark, we'd be able to walk down the back side tomorrow morning.
We're nowhere near the summit. Now, our concern is getting off the diamond face. Go a quarter down the diamond and move a few degrees to the right. That's our position.
Are you talking about Stettner's ledges?
Yeah. I did the Stettner descent route once. Excellent climbing surface the entire way. Plenty of footing.
Stettner's ledges sounds like the place we want. Now, the map's blown away. Jack, you holding?
Yep.
What is it?
Devil winds.
I knew the Diamond Face experienced afternoon summer storms, but I thought by late September...
Just be happy this isn't summer. Those summer storms are renowned for a high incidence of lightning.
Oh, great. What else can I expect?
The devil winds to return.
What happens if the devil winds return when we're crossing the Diamond Face?
We'll both be blown to kingdom come.
Nearly everyone at our party mentioned our new Sears Dream Supreme carpeting.
Did anyone say anything about my rutabaga dip?
Marvin said Dream Supreme looks so thick and luxurious. He loved its velvety soft plush pile.
What about my rutabaga dip?
Eloise adored the color.
Of my rutabaga dip?
I told her that avocado lime is just one of Dream Supreme's 20 lustrous colors, and when Doris heard that Dream Supreme is so reasonably priced and treated with Scotchgard brand fabric protector...
Okay, what about my tuna fish upside down cake?
Dream Supreme carpeting in most larger Sears retail stores. Oh, here I go again. It's time to rent one of those steam-type carpet cleaners.
Why rent? Now Sears puts power in a carpet cleaner you can own yourself. The Power Spray from Sears for easy home carpet cleaning. Power Spray sprays hot water into your carpet, then sucks up the dirty water.
You can see the dirt you get out. Dirt you didn't even know was there.
The Power Spray carpet cleaner, a convenient carpet cleaner you can own yourself. Available at most Sears retail stores. Kenmore. Solid as Sears.
That's right. Get yours now. Oh, wait, you can't.
You can't. No. Yeah. What an exciting tale this is. Guy gets blinded, about halfway up a mountain.
And yeah.
Probably got to find your way off. I mean, it's, I just find, and I tell you what, the closer we get to the end, the more tense it's going to become. So just hang in there, folks. You got a great story here tonight.
Yeah, we do. Going to be a wild ride, and we got enough time to get it all in there. We want to thank everybody for listening in live today. Wow. Angel, thanks for joining us. Fogsbane, GGSI Paper, and Jacques Le Nostre Chat, welcome, and thanks, as we get into part two of Sears Radio Theater.
Hey, look, in here, inside this stylish man's dress shirt. I'm a Sears Value dress shirt label just popping with pride, because Sears Value dress shirts are sure to be popular for a number of reasons. They have fashion spread collars, come in classic patterns and solids in short and long sleeves. You'll appreciate the perma-pressed polyester or polyester cotton blends for easy care, plus at low value prices, what a buy! Just look for me, the Value dress shirt label, at Sears Men's Store, where style, sense, and satisfaction combine to label me right for you.
I love to eat.
But it takes so long to cook.
That's why we both love our new Kenmore microwave oven from Sears.
I can cook a 5-pound roast medium rare in just 30 minutes, or 3 strips of bacon in 3.5 minutes on a paper plate. Bake 2 potatoes in 8 minutes, and cook vegetables faster than boiling them in water.
That means less time in the kitchen.
And more with you.
Fast, clean, cool cooking with Sears Kenmore microwave ovens, all with automatic defrost. Choose the right model for your kitchen from the many styles available at most Sears retail stores.
On the sheer diamond face of Long's Peak in Colorado, two men continue a climb in the course of which one slip will bring death to both of them. Jack DeShields is a Class 6 direct aid climber, a professional who has been temporarily blinded by an accidental fall. Dan Hunt, his companion, is a mountaineering apprentice and father of two, upon whose eyes their lives now depend. Can you imagine what two men in such a situation would be talking about while one of them hammers life-giving steel pitons into the rock wall of the Diamond Face? Just listen. You are with them.
The whole Sierra Club is on the edge of its collective seat listening to your talk.
Oh, I noticed an ample supply of yawns.
Believe me, nobody was yawning. Not many professionals have climbed mountains on each of the continents. I guess today is your toughest setback ever.
I don't follow you. I'm hanging here talking, listening to you sink a piton.
And I'm one of the seven dwarfs. You unhook yourself from the belaying rope.
When we cross the Diamond Face, my footing won't be as secure as yours. I see no reason in pulling you off the mountain with me.
I'm reclipping your running line.
Even though I'm temporarily blind, some decisions remain my responsibility.
Wrong, Jack. I make the decisions now. You have the knowledge, the experience, and probably the stamina, but I have the eyes.
I'm grateful that you're concerned with my safety, but
I reclipped you to my running line not because I'm worried you might fall, but because I'm selfish. I'm afraid I might fall. And you better belay me when I yell falling.
I'll do my best. Pray lead on, O sighted one.
I'll tie you in on Stettner's ledges. Back up piton every 6 feet across the Diamond Face would give us a fighting chance.
In our case, I'd say don't bet on it, but couldn't hurt. When fall impact yanks a lead piton out of rock, the secondary pitons usually follow in rapid succession.
Remember when you went to the circus? How the crowd gasped when the ringmaster announced the high wire act was performing without a net?
Yeah, sure.
Well, what we're crossing doesn't even have a wire. You ready to test the backup?
I feel like a kid testing the water temperature with his toe.
Well, your form wouldn't make the cover of a field handbook, but nobody's watching anyway. On a direct line from your head, arm's length away, you'll find a crack in the rock wall that might pass for a handhold.
What do you mean, might pass?
I only spot the holds. You decide whether the hold will support your weight.
Found it.
You can't stop between holds like that. You'll fall.
What was that move worth? A foot?
You're selling yourself short by half a foot.
Good. At this pace, we'll reach Stettner's ledges in moonshine.
Determination makes its own time.
A positive thinker and nowhere to hide. Somebody save me.
Please, no negative vibes. I'm trying to believe what I'm saying myself.
You know, you'll wear yourself out machine hammering that way.
Yeah, I'm a regular hammering dynamo. But this wind affects my efficiency. Jack, the devil wind isn't coming back, is it?
Probably.
Oh, thanks. My paranoia needed feeding.
Anytime. I take it when the hammering stops. That's my signal to prepare for my next foot and a half leap.
You got it. Feet and handholds are in a direct line. 3 feet apart at your furthest reach.
You know, don't you, that you're taking liberties with the blind?
I've got you belayed if you slip. Besides, I want to test my system. That's it. Plant your feet. Your handhold's a couple of inches higher up.
No good. I can't find it. Your backup holding?
You only fell a few inches. Everything's under control.
Oh, I'd trade these worthless fingers for anything that'd chip rocks.
Now, the belaying rope slacked off. You found a hold.
Foothold. My fingers are wedged in a hairline crack.
Keep moving.
I'm spread like a freshly skinned hide hung out to dry.
You move out that hold or I can't ease up on the belaying rope.
Brace yourself.
I'm holding you.
Move. The pitons.
Keep searching for a hold.
Oh, this isn't working.
Keep searching
for something that isn't. Ah, got one.
I see another hold above your left ear.
Okay. I'm planted.
We made good progress. 5, 6 feet.
You call it progress. I call it scrambling for my life. Oh, you didn't bargain for this when you volunteered to guide me across the Diamond Face.
I knew what I was buying into. I told you, our act has no wire.
I'm talking about fatigue. Fatigue makes the best of climbers careless, and on this rock wall, carelessness kills.
Only another 25 feet to Stettner's ledges. I promise not to get careless.
Well, you already are careless. Your line of protective pitons scars the mountain, and you've no plan for extracting them.
I think other climbers will forgive us the pitons we leave behind under the circumstances.
Well, that's not my point. You're pressing. And that's careless. Now you tie me in and get out while you can.
Your next hold comes direct from the Alpine catalog, custom made. Now extend your right leg halfway. Plant. Plant.
It's all right. I'm on. My fingers feel raw. I think I scraped all the skin off my knuckles, too.
A few bloody fingers won't do you any harm. Come on already.
Coming. Coming. How far?
Another 5 feet, and we've reached Stetner's Ledges. You ready?
Yeah. And able. I have my reservations about willing.
Straight out from your shoulder, you'll feel a depression in the diamond face.
I'm touching it now.
I didn't find any prominent holes next to the rock ledge like I expected. You might be able to push across the depression and brace your feet on its lip.
Are you on the rock ledge?
No, I'm hanging right beside it. I'll help you onto the ledge first and then climb on.
Right. I'm pushing across. This position isn't secure at all.
Another couple of feet.
Falling.
Steady yourself.
I'm dragging on your belaying rope. I pray to God you have your footing.
I've got zip. The first piton pulled out. You're hanging on me, and I'm hanging on that last piton. Any second, it'll pull out, too.
How far am I from Stetner's Ledges?
3 feet.
Grab any hold you can. I'm going to swing out onto the rock ledge.
You're on. You made it onto the ledge. Falling.
Belay on.
Oh, thank God. I'm below the rock ledge with good climbing surface. Climbing?
Climb.
Oh, man. It's nice to be alive. When I fell, I was sure you'd follow me down the mountain. How did you manage to hold on?
Once I pulled myself up onto the rock ledge, I braced my feet and my back against the mountain. I just reeled in the slack on the belaying rope as fast as I could until you yelled. Then it was a matter of being prepared for the fall impact. And fortunately, I was.
My waist rope was crushing my rib cage hanging on the end of that belay rope. Another 5 minutes and I'd be purple. How bad are you banged up?
I'm not sure. Ribs are a bit sore.
Your ribs have a right to feel sore. You were thrashed against the rock wall twice. Feel broken?
No way to tell unless I stand up. I'm too weak to move for the moment.
You and me both. Who is Stetner?
I don't know.
Well, whoever Stetner is, I appreciate the use of his ledge. After we catch our breath, what would you think of making a try for the summit?
I think you were a figment of my imagination and that I was delirious.
We used all our pitons crossing the diamond face. I haven't any equipment left to tie you in.
You skunk. You planned that all along, didn't you?
If I did tell you, you'd never have crossed the diamond face. I couldn't leave you on the rock wall to die.
Oh, instead, you decided to lure me from one survival crisis to another without my knowledge. I resent being manipulated.
The ranger map pointed our way off this mountain. The way is up. We climb Stetner's Ledges and walk down the backside trail tomorrow morning.
You idiot! You're gambling our lives on reaching the summit in less than 3 hours of daylight. That's asking a heck of a lot. Especially with a blind man for a handicap.
Sears Radio Theater will return after this message from your local station.
Well, it all started when my son Willard said,
"Dad, you just don't understand how it is to be in my shoes."
And so I said,
"Okay, I'll tell you what. I'll do what you do for a day, and I'll see how it is."
Well, first it was great. I slept in till 20 minutes too, like Willard does. But then after school, Willard told me,
The garage is dirty. Would you mind cleaning it up?
And I told him...
I'll see about it later.
Willard, and he said...
You'll see about it
all
now.
All right, all right. And so I did. But I wasn't very happy about it. Well, after supper, I thought I might catch a little TV, but then Willard reminded me...
Don't you have homework to do?
Two things I know for sure. One is, I'm going to work harder to understand how Willard feels. And two, I got to get Willard's shoes off. My feet are killing me. Listening, caring, and sharing. That's what understanding is all about. From the Mormons, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
There you go. And we are got a whole lot of radio still remaining.
Well, that's because Willard's shoes are a lot smaller than his. He got, you know, he should be, shouldn't be putting his shoes on, too.
Yeah, Willard's got those little tiny rat feet.
He does. He does.
No, that was Ben. Willard was the kid, and Ben.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you think, Dale? Exciting story going on here?
This is pretty intense. We should probably run right into part three of Climb so we can get to this exciting finish. We'll be back after the conclusion.
And here's the concluding act of Climb.
This ledge has a flat surface, a couple of feet wide. We'll be able to walk for a little while. How about we take five?
Oh, we can't afford a break. What time is it?
3:10. We've been climbing for an hour straight. I want to sit down for a minute.
Your gamble either pays off in 2 hours or nightfall traps us on the mountain. The higher we climb the Stettner route, the more hazardous the rock surface becomes, and the harder it is to backtrack to tenable ground. It'll be totally dependent on your eyes to point out my footing near the summit. It's impossible to spot holes in the dark, so like it or not, we're in a foot race with a setting sun.
You're right. Darkness falls fast in the mountains. I wouldn't want to deprive myself of the pleasure of sticking another flag pin in my den map.
Where I can keep the center of gravity over my feet, I'll be able to climb by feel. You have to use your eyes to climb, like a chess game, several moves ahead. That way, we won't end up on a patch of rotten rock or blocked by a cul-de-sac. A blind man like me would bump his nose against a cul-de-sac before he ever knew it was there.
Is the devil wind on this side of the mountain, too?
No. We're on the north face of Long's Peak.
A ledge ends here. At a junction of rock ledges. One line to the left, one to the right. Which do we take?
This mountain is not my hometown. The last time I took the Stettner route was 2 years ago. And we used a map to guide us down, not up.
Then we're faced with a small problem because we don't have a map. The wind blew it away. How do I know which is the safe route?
We won't have time to backtrack if we choose the wrong line. I'm depending on your eyes. You decide.
You said you remembered a steep pitch towards the summit?
Yeah.
We'll take the right line, then. Hope we're closer to the summit than I think we are. We climb side by side where possible, so I can qualify your holes.
Balance is everything on rock. Sometimes rock can look deceptively secure. Watch out for loose outcroppings.
Now, stick to a three-point stance. Yeah. Keep both feet and one hand planted. Let your free hand seek out the next hold. Spread eagle climbing tires you out. Throws off your balance.
I'm aware of that. And I'm also aware of the time. We move fast or we lose.
Well, better the rocks fall than us. You don't sound too angry with me for manipulating you into this climb anymore.
I am. I haven't forgotten. It's difficult to punch out somebody you can't see.
I'm forewarned. I'll keep my guard up.
I'll either punch you out or I'll buy you a drink. Depends on my condition when I'm returned to civilization. What's the time?
3:40.
3:40 already? What's happened? What do you see?
You didn't mention anything about a chimney.
Chimney? I don't remember a chimney.
Well, there's one standing in our way. Runs a crooked line toward the summit. Impossible to determine what we'll find above it.
Well... we'll climb the chimney to the summit.
What if there's a cul-de-sac above the chimney? The game is over and we cash in our chips.
We find a cul-de-sac, we'll work our way back down to a wide ledge and spend the night. Now, I know three ways up a chimney.
counterforce, jamming, or, if you absolutely have to, the layback.
The chimney closes sharply at the top. We'll have to leave our packs behind. Too narrow for them to make it through.
Press and pull yourself up the funneling sides of the chimney, taking as much abrasion on the soles of your feet as you can. You keep your face and hands free, away from the rock, in case you slip. And for heaven's sake, be careful when jamming. You slip with your elbow jammed in a rock crack and you're an instant basket case.
Climbing.
Climb. I'll let you clear a couple of feet before I follow. That way, if you kick down any loose rock, it won't have much momentum when it hits me.
Lots of prominent rock. You shouldn't have much trouble.
Well, chimney climbing requires more strength than skill. How far are you above me?
4 feet.
Yeah. It's good enough clearance. Climbing.
Rock. Rock.
Ah.
Sorry, Jack. Rock fell away when I touched it.
Don't let that slow you down. Sun won't wait for us to catch up. How much daylight we got left?
It's 4 o'clock. We're down to our last hour.
Hey, I grabbed your foot. What'd you stop for?
Air. I'm not used to chimney climbing. It burns me out.
Push yourself. I want to live, man.
My arm muscles are trembling.
Well, this run for the summit was your idea. Now move.
Rock. Cleared me.
Keep moving.
We've reached the bottleneck. Almost out of the chimney. I feel miserable. My arms and legs are lead weights. I thought the whole point of climbing was to enjoy yourself.
You don't call this fun?
Maybe I'd enjoy myself more if you'd quit pushing me.
I stopped pushing you. You won't reach the summit.
Who needs who on this climb?
I don't remember asking to tag along.
I'm not in the habit of making an ass of myself. Mountain's getting to me.
The mountain's getting to both of us. My blindness doesn't help my disposition any either.
I'm twisting my way out of the bottleneck. There's a small ledge above the chimney. Watch your head.
Okay. I'm through the chimney.
My body's aching. I feel like a heavyweight champ's personal punching bag after a hard workout.
I'm a little worn around the edges myself. Dan, I can tell by the air temperature that twilight's fading fast. It could even be dark for all I know. Sun goes down, the night brings the cold. What's the real time?
I have half an hour at the outside to guide you up the pitch to the summit. I can see the summit from here.
Good news makes me antsy. Let's climb.
The pitch to the summit has a long, vertical crack running up the first 10 feet or so. I'll put your hand on it.
The crack should be secure enough to thread us up the first part of the pitch.
Wait for me to point out your next hole when you reach the end of the crack.
I promise not to wander off.
Rock, hold tight.
This route needs a little gardening work. My skin jumps every time you yell, rock.
No sense trying to dodge the rocks you hear. You might lose your grip on the crack and fall. The belay line is useless now.
I'll unhook us.
Leave the belay line alone. We might need it later.
Where's my next hold?
Straight out from your shoulder. Use your right hand.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good hold.
Pull up on your hands until you're balanced, then plant.
This is fine.
Slow down.
Plenty of footing.
You're going to run me over.
Pick up the pace, will you? Sun will be down in a few minutes.
Not much to choose from around me now.
The air's growing colder.
Plant your left leg or you'll fall.
Okay. I'm planted. Will you move?
We've come to some loose rock. Hold on a minute.
We'll cross it and hope for the best. We haven't got time to wait.
Extend your right hand above your shoulder and bring it down slow.
Right.
You find a hold?
Well, this is another hairline crack. Isn't there anything better?
You want me to carry you up the summit, or are you able to help yourself?
I carry my own weight.
I'd feel out my own holds, but the rock surface is too steep.
Rock outcropping above your left knee. Use your hand to make sure it isn't loose first. Then step up on the outcropping if it'll hold you.
The outcropping will hold. Where do I put my hands?
I'm looking.
You aren't buying this ground as an investment. You're climbing it. Come on already.
You're going to press us into a swan dive.
We got to keep moving before the sun goes down.
Good handhold, about 3-4 inches above your right ear. Find it?
This isn't what I call a good handhold, but it'll have to do. Twilight almost gone?
Yeah, twilight's fading fast. Another outcropping ahead of us, sort of a rock horn shape.
How much further after the rock horn?
I thought professional climbers had a sixth sense about summits. Can't you smell it?
How far?
Clear the rock horn, and I'll tell you. The horn is a solid, two-handed hold above you to your left.
I still don't smell summit, Dan.
Watch yourself. Keep your balance.
Oh, God, no. Footing fell out from under me. My fingers are locked together around the rock horn.
I'm planted on the ledge directly above you. I'll reel in the belaying rope and pull you up.
Hang on. You're wasting your time, Dan. I unhooked myself from the belaying rope back in the chimney.
Damn foolish move. I'll try to grab your wrist. You can pull up on my arm until you find your footing.
No way. You'd fall with me.
I'm planted tight on the ledge. You won't pull me off.
I can't see you, Dan. You lied to get me across the diamond face. How do I know you're not lying down? Look, this isn't worth both our lives.
Take my hand.
No. There must be a foothold.
I've got your wrist. Pull up on my arm.
That's it.
Pull.
You are one crazy man. You know that?
Yeah. So were the Wright brothers. Stand up and walk over here.
Stand up? You mean we made the summit?
Scout's on it. We made it. We're off the mountain. Hey, to walk away from the edge or I'll be up here by myself. Take my hand for a couple of steps.
Dan, thank you for saving my life. Any sensible man would have left me hanging on the diamond face.
I told you I've been out of my senses for years. Maybe after the doctors take that bandage off your head and you can see again, you help me pick up those pitons I left on the diamond face.
You name the day, and I'll climb with you. Now, how much time do we have left before sunset?
Sunset was an hour ago. We both finished the climb blind.
Are we finally set for Grandma?
I think so. We've got the new Sears Travel Guard baby seat in the car.
Right, and the extra sleep and play baby seat.
Oh, Grandma will love those. They're so cute and yet practical.
The extra baby blankets and bottles are in the vinyl diaper bag.
Oh, Sears certainly did make shopping for the baby easy.
Sure did. Well, I think we've got everything.
Honey, I think you've forgotten something.
Hmm? The baby.
Your baby's room. Furnish it with the quaintness and charm of Sears Jenny Lind's crib, dresser, and chest. Your baby will be secure in our old-fashioned crib built with high sides and a safety drop-side latch. And each handsome maple color piece comes in a non-toxic finish. Sears Jenny Lind dresser and chest is furniture that will adapt gracefully as baby grows older, too. So visit us soon, because Sears has baby buys bundled up. Available at most Sears retail stores.
Presenting Sears' very charming spring shirt dress in small yarn-dyed woven checks, stripes, or plaids. It's a great versatile dress for work because to finish off the dress, Sears has conjured up a complimenting vest. Vests come lined or reversible in enchanting colors that work wonderful spells on the rest of your wardrobe, too. Sears vest plus a dress, the bewitchingly correct dress this spring.
Available at most larger Sears retail stores. I sell draperies at Sears. Yesterday, a lady came in and said that she'd been in and out of about every store in town looking for draperies and at this point didn't know what she wanted anymore. I asked questions about her tastes and decor and then made suggestions. She was thrilled. She found what she wanted and learned a little, too. It made me feel good to know that I helped her out. Sears people are friendly people who help you find what you want.
You've been listening to Sears Radio Theater, brought to you five nights a week by Sears Roebuck and Company. Sears, where America shops. Climb was written by Bruce Martin, produced and directed by Fletcher Markham. Your host was Richard Widmark. Our stars were Vic Perrin and Stephen Markle. The music for Sears Radio Theater was composed and conducted by Nelson Riddle. Art Gilmore speaking. The Elliott Lewis production of Sears Radio Theater is a presentation of CBI.
Really? They had Mel from Mel's Diner? I'll be darned.
Yeah. You'd be surprised at people that showed up on these individual episodes. Even like Dawes Butler made a few of these. Yeah.
Excellent. And real quick here, gang, we got that in. Amazing. Show number 498 we're wrapping up today. That means 1 week from tonight is show 500. But before we get there, Friday night at 8:30, it's actually we're headed out to the junkyard with X-1 Johnny Dollar. And what is this Chet Cheddar, Dave?
Chet Cheddar, Tales from the Morgue. Yep, yep.
Yeah. Return of the Master Constipator? That ought to be interesting.
Interesting. Yeah, it's a little bit of humor in there, as you might tell. Hey, do we have time to learn a little something from that last story?
Oh, yeah. That's probably pretty important that we share one last bit of knowledge.
One last bit of knowledge.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents A Garrulous Moral of the Story.
Not yet. Okay, ready? Hang on. There are three ways to get off of a mountain. One, climb up. Two, climb down. Or three, take the shortcut. Now,
there you go.
Okay.
I'm sorry. The soundboard is being a little glitchy. I'm serious.
So, there you go.
There you go.
I would not advise taking three, but man, what a story that was.
Yes, it was great. And again, Friday at 8:30, we're heading out to the junkyard. Then, show number 500. That's right, Saturday, May the 1st. We're going down a trip to World War II and the music from that era. It's an all-musical show. Yeah, you can expect Spike Jones, the Andrews Sisters, many more.
Yeah.
Bing Crosby. And some artists you may not be as familiar with, but really good stuff. And we'll take you through the different phases of World War II with our musical tribute. And that's 1 week from tonight at 6:30 Eastern.
Yep. And I look forward to that. And Dale's done such a great job of pairing those together and putting them in an order from the beginning of the war to everybody coming home.
Blah, 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 blah.
Blah, 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 blah. Wrong guy. Blah. He's on Twitch. Don't forget, right after the show goes off at 8 o'clock, Twitch. Sure. You'll find Gar the Ghoul. And when I talked to him today, he was up to doing his show. So we should be right back with a new horrible horror starring Gar the Ghoul.
Yeah, and there's going to be no after party, gang, because just because. We're saving our energy for show 500.
There you go. There you go.
Thanks, everyone, for stopping in. Angel, Jacques, GGSI Paper, Fogs Bane, as always, thank you so much for joining us right here on Erie House Radio.
Good night.
Ooh. Good night. See, we got both of them in.
Okay.
The castle lights are growing dim.
Oh, that's good.
There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone.
Don't come alone. Ah, shit.
Don't come alone.
Nice more.
Helps when you hit the right button.
No, seriously, the mouse is jumping all over. I don't know what's going on, but we made it through it. We made it through it.
Yep, we David. Did. Check where your laser is. You might need to clean where the laser is, because if there's cat hair like there is on mine sometimes, it'll help the mouse jump all over the place. So
true enough.
Well, all right, my friend.
Get your well-earned rest, and we will see you next weekend on the radio.
Very good. And you too, my friend.
Yep. Say good night, Jimmy.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs. And it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and in cut think can do. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Do you mind turning off the radio?